Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world. From the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines, you'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Good morning, everyone. This is Peter Mingles here. Actually, it's just starting to be good afternoon for those people that might be listening in. My name is Peter Mingles. We are here on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. That's buildingfortunesradio.com. For all those people unfamiliar with my voice, my name is Peter Mingles. We own this radio show. We've been hosting this since 2012. And from the very beginning, I asked Jim Turner to be a guest host on our radio spot. So when he's in town and he's available, he gets a chance to join us on Building Fortunes Radio. Just as a friendly reminder, you can always catch us live if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/live. That's buildingfortunesradio.com/live. Or you could always listen in on the phone if you go to 347-237-4097 as well. And I know Jim Turner's in town today, and I know he just joined us on the line. And for those people that want to hear more about these exciting radio shows that we do, you can catch the previous archives on buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. If you go there, you'll be able to hear the previous radio shows that we've done. And although some people might be thinking, well, they're previous radio shows, Jim Turner's always given us great educational lessons on every single one of them. So they're worth listening into, and if you want to share them with your people, you certainly can. But I always friendly remind you to do this. Sign up for his newsletter. If you go to citizens.org, CITIZENS.org, you'll be able to sign up for his newsletter and get the action alerts and the other cool things that I get too. Some of them will be even customized towards the specific state that you might be in. So, Jim, thanks for being here on your radio show.
Well, thanks a lot, Peter. I'm glad to be here. So what are we doing today?
Well, we can talk about tons of things, but if you want to bring us up to speed on whatever's happening with homeopathy, we're
well, let's start with homeopathy, and then let's go back to let's call it for the moment censorship on the social media, and then a couple of other items might be of interest.
On the homeopathy front,
it's quite interesting. We're moving forward very carefully with the FDA. We have a proposed petition, and when I say we, I'm talking about a consumer group called Americans for Homeopathic Choice, and which our firm is advising as lawyers. And the petition is filed. They drafted the petition and put it in, and it's very interesting. It's kind of a path-blazing effort to set up a way of doing homeopathic regulation that preserves the FDA's authority with regard to misbranding and adulteration. That would be, is it manufactured properly? Is it clean? Is it done the way it's supposed to be? On the one hand, that's adulteration. On the other hand, misbranding is the thing that says homeopathy on it actually homeopathy? And our consumer group, the Americans for Homeopathic Choice, believes strongly that there needs to be good regulation on how things are manufactured and what they're claimed to be. However, the group feels very, very strongly that FDA's authority to regulate dangerous chemicals that are used as drugs does not apply to homeopathy, which is not made from dangerous chemicals. The fundamental premise is that the very, very dangerous chemicals that get turned into pharmaceutical drugs are allowed to be on the market because FDA does an extremely rigorous, very intense review of those chemicals to determine the risk that they present is outweighed by a benefit. Now, there's a huge argument as to whether the FDA does their job well and whether it's being gamed by the pharmaceutical industry and whether people are being harmed by drugs that are on the market. Over 100,000 people a year die from drugs that are used properly. That's the minimum number. This is according to the American Medical Association Journal. Over 100,000 people a year die from the proper prescription of drugs. And that is in the process where the FDA has this vigorous authority to check the risks and benefits of the drugs. And when you watch the TV ads, you can see that here is something being offered as helpful, and often they are very helpful. However, anyone who's using those drugs or is considering using those drugs needs to look extremely carefully at the side effects, which are all listed at the end of the ads. Very, very important because, as they say, you could have all kinds of serious problems, including possibly death from these drugs if you don't use them carefully, monitor them well, and so forth. That's a system that was set up in 1962 to deal with the fact that pharmaceutical drugs being used between 1938, when the original Food and Drug Act was passed, and 1962, those drugs had caused serious harm leading up to ultimately what was known as the thalidomide incident, where hundreds of babies were born around the world, including in the United States, although that was not, that was covered up fairly nicely, but it, including in the United States, hundreds of babies around the world were born with very, very serious birth defects, short arms and legs, gnarled arms and legs, and the FDA, as a part of the response to that, was given this authority to pre-approve drugs, both for their safety and their effectiveness. It so happened that homeopathy had been approved and added to the law in 1938, and when the 1962 drugs were amendments were adopted, there were a set of exclusions, and they were for anything that was regulated before 1938, which homeopathy was, anything that was generally recognized as safe, which homeopathy is, and anything which is not prescribed for to cure, treat, mitigate, diagnose, or prevent a disease. And homeopathy is actually designed to address an individual and to strengthen their ability to resist problems that come into their system. So that on three grounds, homeopathy actually is excluded from the new drug pre-approval process designed for chemical drugs. That's what the issue is before the FDA now. First, the argument being FDA should have the authority to make sure that what is called homeopathic is in fact homeopathic, and it should have the authority to say that homeopathic products that are called homeopathic and are homeopathic are properly produced. It should not try to use its chemical drug pre-approval authority to try to approve homeopathic products. Homeopathic products do not have the kind of side effects, they don't have any side effects, that the FDA law was designed to create. The simple question that we would ask is the FDA needs to come up with some kind of a measure. We would go for something like the lethal dose 50. That is the dose of a chemical which kills 50% of the animals that it's tested in. And then that dose is modified arithmetically to create a 100-fold or perhaps a 1,000-fold safety factor. And then they check to see whether that amount of a drug, of a dangerous chemical, does in fact create benefits. We're saying that does not apply to homeopathy. We're saying the law is clear that it's not supposed to be applied to homeopathy, and we're saying that the FDA's way of managing homeopathy for the last, it's been almost 70 years now, maybe longer, I guess about 70 years, has been very positive in regard to homeopathy, including the last 30 years when they had a specific guideline that laid out essentially what I just said. regulate manufacturing processes, regulate misbranding, and do not try to apply the pre-market approval process that's designed for inherently dangerous chemicals that are used as drugs so that they can show that they have a benefit that outweighs the risk. Don't apply that to homeopathy. It's a waste of money. It makes it difficult for homeopathy to be found by consumers. Generally speaking, it is a very bad public health approach. Bad public health approach because, for example, there are systems of pain control in homeopathy which do not require opioids or any other dangerous chemical and which work, and they're actually being used in a number of hospitals around the country right now. The FDA is saying, well, they should be approved first before they're allowed to be marketed. They will not necessarily step right in and take them off the market, but they will create a situation where they are technically illegal, and at any time they want to take it off the market, they can. And this, we're saying, is not only it's bad public health, but it's bad law enforcement. So and that's also true for the multi-drug-using aging population. People who are retired tend to use five or more pharmaceutical products, which often interact, cause problems, and so forth. A huge amount of that duplicative and interactive dangerous chemical use of drugs can be ameliorated, if not completely eliminated, by homeopathy, because many of the same things can be done with homeopathy and you don't have any of those kind of interactive side effects. This is true also for antibiotics. Homeopathy can do much of what antibiotics does for problems that are in the low temperature range. You know, if you've got a body temperature up to 101 or so forth, you often get an antibiotic now, but you don't need to have an antibiotic. Antibiotics should be preserved to be used heroically when they're being used for life-saving purposes. And the idea that you use them to mitigate symptoms so you can go to work is a serious overuse of antibiotics, and it's now an international crisis on the antibiotic front, and homeopathy can help address that issue. So that's what we're doing there, and it's interesting because FDA has been very open to having conversations. Consumer groups had two meetings with the FDA. There are ways in which it seems to us that at least some of the people at FDA are looking at homeopathy differently than they did before the consumer group showed up and started saying, wait a minute. And the consumer group is made up of dozens, in fact, in the hundreds, of mothers who are using homeopathy with their children and families. FDA has noted that in the last 30 years, homeopathy use has gone up. It's unclear as to how much, but it looks like maybe 2% of the population is using homeopathy. We're not sure. But the FDA claims that it's a $3 billion market right now. That's a substantial market, and particularly since it's so cheap, that is, it doesn't cost much to create homeopathic remedies. It may be that every dollar spent on homeopathy is the equivalent of spending $100 on pharmacological products. So if you have a $3 billion market and it's actually 100 times that, suddenly it's a fairly substantial part of the healthcare area. And indeed, the effects it has, where it's really helping people, it is a very cost-effective way to bring down the healthcare costs in the country, which are another serious healthcare problem. So all around, the petition that the FDA, Americans for Homeopathy Choice has filed is raising, they're saying, let's focus the authority of FDA where the law put it. The law specifically identifies the homeopathic pharmacopoeia as a source of drugs. They call them drugs to be put into the marketplace. They did not, when they created that set of things called drugs, have a pre-market clearance, cost-benefit ratio, or any of the things that were put in the law in 1962. And we're saying that the intention that was adopted in 1938 to create a space for homeopathy was a very specific, very clearly thought out, was by the sponsor of the entire Food and Drug Act, was Senator Copeland from New York. He'd been the public health commissioner of New York during the flu epidemic of 1918. And interestingly enough, New York had a much less severe flu epidemic than Philadelphia or Boston, just to pick two cities. He used a lot of methods that did not rely on pharmaceuticals to control that epidemic and had a much better showing than other cities. And he then became, because of his success in helping New York City, he became a senator from New York and put his mind to working on how to create good public health, was the drafter of the Food and Drug Act, and shepherded it through Congress, and was very clear that homeopathy should be a specific aspect of that act. And he himself was a homeopath. And he was, toward the end of the 19th century, homeopathy was widely used in the United States. In fact, the Smithsonian Institution had for many years a homeopathic pharmacy on display right in the American History Museum. The old famous buckboard doctors that went house to house in their buckboards, you know, their wagons with a horse, mostly were homeopaths. And their job was to treat the individual, help them strengthen the individual's own ability to resist the various kinds of ailments that were around. And they were highly valued and cherished. When the oil industry came in and looked for places to put money to create products, one wing they created was the chemical industry, which is drugs, pesticides, and food additives. And those have been used ubiquitously since about 1900, maybe a little later than that. And we are now sorting out how we use the non-invasive type processes like homeopathy in conjunction with the very good value that you get from a number of the pharmaceuticals. And it's, you know, there's a whole movement called the integrative medicine movement, which looks at how you do that. That's a long-winded comment, but that's a big issue going on at FDA, and we do have things about it periodically in our newsletter at Citizens for Health. And there are lots of other groups that are working on the same issue. And it's very important to understand that consumers have to be driving this issue. If the pharmaceutical pharmacies that produce these products try to get too far out in front, FDA will retaliate and make trouble for them. And FDA is an unfortunate habit of extending its authority without congressional support. Is working hard in the homeopathic area. It works in many other areas as well. It's kind of a natural thing for regulatory agencies to do. And, in fact, many of the people, I would say most, I wrote a book in 1970 called The Chemical Feast, Food Protection, the Data Report on Food Protection at the FDA. And it was very clear then, and it's gotten clearer since, that FDA, as a prototypical regulatory agency, has it built into its process to expand its authority on a continuing basis. Most of the people who are a part of that agency believe they are doing the right thing, they are doing a good thing, they are helping the public. And they periodically run into trouble on that. They put a lot of barriers in the way of AIDS drugs and ultimately the AIDS community, people with AIDS, actually had a sit-in outside the FDA and closed it down completely for 24 hours, completely shook up the entire FDA operation because they were operating on the premise that they were protecting the people with AIDS by keeping their drugs off the market, and they did not see it that way. That's the same with homeopathy. The FDA steps up and says we're going to protect the public from the dangers of homeopathy. But when you ask them what the dangers are, they don't seem to have any. They point at certain things, but every one of the things they point at is something about the way the product was manufactured or had something being called homeopathic which wasn't homeopathic. Absolutely, they should take action. Something has got microbial contamination, they should take action. That's their job. Something says it's homeopathy and it's not, they should take action. That's their job. We support that, and the consumer group supports that. However, the idea that they're going to create a massive, highly expensive prior approval process for any homeopathic drug is so far outside what the law permits, what their assignment allows, what the society needs from them, that they just need to be stopped from doing that misguided behavior. And as I say, people at the FDA who are hearing this message, I think for the first time, are at least stirring in their interest to find out whether there's anything to the argument that we're making, and if there is, what can they do to be a better regulator. So we have that dialogue going, and it's moving along, and we'll be putting things out periodically at Citizens for Health. The FDA is required by law to respond by December to the petition, and usually the response is, we didn't have time to address your petition, and they get an automatic another 5 months to respond. At the end of that 10 months, then they're supposed to, by law, answer the petition. But unfortunately, they very rarely do. It's almost always, at least on the consumer petitions, they almost always let them go for years. We're hoping to be able to put that behavior, if it happens in this case, before courts or Congress or in some forum that says, no, they can't just let this thing go the way they've been doing in the past. So that's our whole overall framework on homeopathy. I think it's a very, very important issue, and I would like to see as many consumers as possible and are interested, take a look at the petition. You can just Google FDA open petitions, and it's there. We'll post the link on Citizens for Health periodically, and take a look at it. It's a very, very nicely done group by the group. They did all the work pulling it together. We guided them a bit on how the form was, but their thinking is there. And they're very serious people. And they have a very serious message they want first the FDA to hear. They want to present it to Congress, courts, the public, and really make the argument that homeopathy has a very, very important role to play in the healthcare system that can be very, very helpful on a number of these tough healthcare problems. Cost of healthcare, opioids, antibiotic overuse, provide painkillers. There's a whole series of issues which homeopathy can really address quite effectively. So that's my pitch on homeopathy for the moment.
It's a great summary and story. I don't want to run out of time because you had some other things that you wanted to mention, so we're going to skip our commercial, and we're going to go right to what you wanted to talk about on the social media stuff. You know, I just have to say something, Jim, relative to the FDA thing. And I'm going to speak a little bit on the general side because I don't know all the details. We have a good friend of ours who does a radio show, and I won't mention which one because he's afraid the insurance companies are going to come after him. If he does another radio show and even peeps a word of whatever I'm going to say next, he was resistant to being on any kind of drugs for a really long time. He's got diabetes and a whole bunch of other issues as well. And but tries to take care of himself the best way he possibly can, was on a drug that was just recalled, or whatever the right term from the FDA would be, for blood pressure. He resisted this for over 2 years. And then all of a sudden, one day, I get a phone call that he's not going to be on the radio show because he just went through emergency surgery. He had a blockage in his intestines. They wound up finding that it was a big tumor. They wound up taking 2 feet of his intestines out. They think they got the cancer. They found that it was cancerous. But he had just started taking this same blood pressure medicine, which the FDA took off the market because of cancer concerns. And I'm probably using some of the wrong terms, so you can clean that up if you wanted to. But here you have the FDA that takes a drug off, but my friend still has 2 feet less of his intestines, huge medical bills, probably never going to be the same guy again, you know, because of the things that happen, for a drug that was approved by the FDA. So I don't know if you want to comment on any of that sort of stuff. And I know there's no way to prove that his cancer came from that drug, but, you know, and that's obviously going to have to be done in court through some kind of settlements, if anything. But the reality is that I would hope the FDA would be spending more time on cancer-causing drugs than worrying about beating up some guys that are pushing homeopathy, which has never killed anybody ever. So back to you, if you want to comment
on that.
Well, that
we certainly would hope that would be the case, and we would like them to actually beef up their ability to deal with these drugs. At one point, they'll approve a drug for use, and then they'll add another use, maybe, and then another use, depending on what the drug industry somebody in the drug industry asked for. But at one point, the Government Accountability Project came up with the fact that 50% of all of the approved uses of drugs by the FDA over a 10-year period had been withdrawn by the FDA. The problem is that the process is very, very, very weak. They have the FDA does no actual research on any of the drug applications. It's all reviewing the research done by the companies. The companies have huge staffs that sit there and tinker with the data to make sure that the data pushes their drug through. And they will often argue that the reason drug prices have to be so high is that a very few drugs actually that they start out in the industrial process actually end up coming through and being approved by FDA. That's probably true. And the line that allows them to go from the drug company to the FDA is a fuzzy line. So many things get to the FDA, then the guy at the FDA or the woman at the FDA reviews it. They try to stop it. We had one whistleblower who told us that he was called in by his boss. He turned down three drugs, said that they didn't pass because of their data. And the guy said, look around you and see all these people who are working here. Understand if you disapprove too many drugs, they'll all lose their jobs because the drug industry pays the FDA to do the reviews. And that kind of pressure and process causes the things that come through the FDA to be, the line is fuzzy. They get them through barely successful versus really powerfully successful, but they all look the same in the market. And as I say, over 100,000 people a year die from drugs approved by the FDA properly prescribed. And the result of that drug deaths are now in the top 10 of the things that kill people. In fact, by some statistics, they may be the number one thing, but at least they're up there in the top two or three. And this is a process that needs to be looked at. One of the things we think could help is getting homeopathy more widely used, and you wouldn't have people relying so much on these drugs. Therefore, they wouldn't be exposed to the side effects of the drugs. If your friend had had a good, solid practicing homeopath, he might very well have gotten some kind of an approach that would have helped his body resist whatever it was that started that cancer. We're not arguing that homeopathy does not cure diseases. It does not treat diseases. It does not diagnose diseases. It helps people strengthen their own system. That's the whole point.
Okay, perfect. And I know you wanted to bring up the other point about some of the censorship.
Well, I was going to say on the social media, we were talking about Alex Jones being blocked by all the social media platforms. Well, last week, 80 alternative medicine sites were taken down from Facebook. It's very interesting to see what's happening. Essentially, the established authorities are working very, very hard to block information going out on the social media. The security people are doing it. All the regulators are doing it. Financial data, health data. FDA is working with all of the platforms to block information. Basically, what they're doing is the FDA has a view that's a very expansive view of their authority. They believe that they make the decisions for what the public should be allowed to consume. And in the healthcare area, drugs and food additives, the devices, they are the ones that make the decision to what the public is allowed to have access to. Increasingly, courts are cutting back on some of that authority in various ways, and the FDA is just really, really resisting that in all kinds of strange ways. But nonetheless, the courts are a barrier. So what the FDA is doing is going to the social media platforms and saying, you don't have restrictions from the courts. You're private businesses. You can do anything you want. So here's a bunch of things that we think you should say should not be allowed to be advertised on your sites. And in fact, they're going even farther. They're not even allowed to be discussed on their sites. Because, see, the FDA can't restrict anything that's not tied to selling a product. But Facebook can. Facebook can just say, you can't talk about alternative cancer medicine because we decided you can't. And we're a private industry, and we get to do what we want to do, and that's just the way it is. So they did. They took 80 alternative medicine sites down last week. And I would suspect that they're going to do more of that. The main thing is that an individual in our society is responsible for their own health. They are the ones that need to make the decisions about what to do to live a healthy, happy, and long life. They need access to all possible information that could help them make the decisions that will cause them to have long and happy lives. The FDA has a mission to, and the FTC as well, has a mission to limit what they can have access to. And the argument is there are some bad things that if you don't have some limits, then there can be bad things out there that will be really seriously problematic, and that's we can't have that. We have to stop it. Actually, that's not what the law says. The law says if you make a fraudulent statement, you can be stopped. But if you make an incorrect statement, you can't be stopped. They say you can be stopped if it's tied to a product. The courts say it can't be stopped as a matter of free speech. Whether it's tied to a product or not now becomes an issue, and it's being debated in the courts, in the Congress, in the FDA, and so forth. And the FDA is reaching out to the private companies that control the Internet and saying to them, we can't do this, but you can. Stop these people from saying this thing can cure cancer or this thing is good for heart disease or this thing is good for blood pressure. Don't let them say that. Don't let them talk about natural products. Don't let them talk about herbs. Don't let them talk about a whole range of things. And the companies are apparently, you know, they're caving in. I mean, they are caving in. We know they're caving in because they are blocking stuff. So it's a very, very interesting situation. If you are going to be allow the government to block bad things, they will always expand and block things that aren't bad. It's this natural function. And it's a tough issue. It's a tough issue to draw a line on or to make standards for, but we're going through it, and it's going to be quite an extensive battle. I personally think we should push as hard as we can for as much information as we can possibly make available, because my understanding of democracy is it's based on having informed populace so they can make choices. So that's the issue on social media that I wanted to bring up.
Now, I don't know which 80 sites that were shut down. Do you have any examples
we're
on anything
to,
that
we're
we might...
To get the list. We're trying to get the list exactly, and we'll find out who it is, you know, what they are, and do some more work on letting people know what that is. And it's so fascinating because these people that run these companies really, really think they know a whole lot of stuff, and they are very, very smart, very, very clever when it comes to managing bits of data. But in terms of wisdom, insight, knowledge, an awful lot of the leadership of Silicon Valley and Washington State Internet stuff quit college or never went to college. They really are precocious, very, very clever people, you know, best known as the best and the brightest. Pretty much the same kind of mindset that in retrospect got us into Vietnam and managed to work a lot of other problems for us. Very, very precocious, very, very smart, do very, 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 very well when they're tested. Very clever. They can manipulate very nicely within the marketplace. But for what end, they're not any more skilled in figuring that out than the average citizen. And the democracy's point is that the average citizen has got to be involved as much in making the decisions about choice in society as these very rich, smarty-pants people who run things. And the notion that we're going to give over all this power, it used to be that the government was supposed to be the repository for everybody, you know, the collective power of the culture, but the government is just giving over its power massively to these private entities. And that's a very, very troubling situation. So,
well, Alex Jones was, you know, he's a conspiracy guy, or allegedly this conspiracy guy, and he was saying, if they do it to me, watch out. Watch what's going to happen next. And we all kind of knew that was going to happen, and we've seen how it happens. It's really kind of interesting. When I was watching one of the hearings that they were having for the Google guy, I think it was last week, he was talking about all the filters that he puts in. And again, like you said, a really smart-sounding guy, very well coached, I'm sure, on what he was saying relative to the things on Google. Actually, it was the Twitter guy. And actually, maybe even the Google guy, too. But while they were up there, they were talking about all these filters that they have in place. And one of the senators, if it was a senator, shows, well, then why is this ad right on your platform right now that's pushing heroin, cocaine, other opioids, clearly saying that, how did this one get through? So the reality is that it's crazy. It's just crazy. But where I think our biggest problem is the idea that there's a suppression, if you will, of some of that information. And that's my biggest concern, I think, just like with yours. I know you use the word choice a lot. People need to have knowledge so they can make some choices. Because I think my friend who is now, 2 feet less on his intestine and dealing with now with class action lawsuits against drug companies trying to save his life and maybe his family's finances, would much rather have had some alternatives, maybe naturally. Go ahead, please.
Do we have a little bit of time here?
We do. We can take as much as you want.
One of our family members was being urged to take Xarelto and explained to the doctor that didn't want to do that, just like your friend. And the doctor said, no, you have to do it. I said, well, how about this? There are 18,000 lawsuits against Xarelto. Why don't you go read about those lawsuits and then compare the risks that they're alleging versus the benefits you believe Xarelto creates? And the doctor went out and did that and came back and said, you're right. I'm going to say to you, it's your choice. We know that it's the choice of the patient to decide what they want to take. And if you don't want to take that drug, I am not going to step in your way and say it's absolutely required, because I can understand that what you're doing is you're saying the risk-benefit ratio is not properly worked out by FDA, because there are so many people who allege that they've been harmed. And I don't think that it's that beneficial on its own to override your concerns. So I'm going to say I don't think it's going to be dangerous. I don't think it'll be dangerous for you to do that. And if it were dangerous, I'd tell you. But I'm saying don't do it. Do other things. And he had a bunch of natural things to do that he accepted. But my point is that the doctors themselves don't actually get a chance to look at what's actually going on in the community, because they're so busy, and the only information they get, or virtually the only information they get, is what the drug salesman brings them and tells them. And they bring, the latest peer-reviewed study and give it to them, and they look at it and they say, oh, great, it's wonderful, but that study's been paid for by the industry, and it's, the journal that runs it is supported by either ads or rants or something from the industry and so on. And so it's a very narrow bit of information that the doctor gets. And interestingly enough, people are getting more and more hip to this. They're getting more and more smart, and they're trying to do things other than take these dangerous drugs. I have one last thing, then we can get off, and that is New Jersey is trying to pass a law that says only registered dietitians can give nutrition information to the public. And a bunch of folks there are fighting it, and Citizens for Health just put out an action alert, and we believe that those are really bad laws. They're just the same kind of thing that goes on across the culture. Something gets going that is an industry. In the case of dietitians, they tend to be highly defensive about the food industry and tell you that food's really good and you can get everything you need from the food supply and so forth, and they teach what would be called the party line, the government party line on diet, and then they want to block anybody else from presenting nutrition information to the public. And so we're urging people to write to the people in the legislature in New Jersey to stop that, and so hopefully they'll do that. And that's the kind of thing that comes out in our newsletter every week.
Would that also include people like, for instance, in home-based businesses that are promoting vitamins, nutrients, all different types of things like that?
Absolutely. I mean, they will try to make trouble for those people. If this law were to pass in New Jersey and they catch you giving nutrition information to individuals, either through a newsletter or presenting it on your own, they will try to stop you. Now, a lot of effort goes into fighting that, and there are free speech grounds and all kinds of things. But if you are saying things about diet and do not sell dietary supplements, no problem. But if you do say things about diet and sell dietary supplements, you're in danger of having a lot of trouble in states that have these kinds of restrictive laws.
So So if you're just a regular guy in a bar talking to your friend about his beer belly and you're saying, listen, you can go lose weight by doing whatever, you're totally okay. If
you're totally okay. But if you reach in your pocket and say, I'm a salesman for this dietary supplement company. Here's the product I was just telling you about. You say that, you would be violating the law in the states that have these restrictions.
Wow, that's amazing. That is truly amazing. And I know it starts in one place, and it seems that if people are sleeping, get some momentum. And thank gosh for people like you and your organizations that catch these types of issues before they catch people sleeping.
Well, is there anything else?
Go ahead,
well,
please.
One of the things we try to do is there are lots of groups around that are fighting these battles, and what we try to do with Citizens for Health is reinforce them and help them be successful in the battle they're fighting. So there's a national nutrition group that's working really hard to block these laws, and we work with them. And when they tell us there's a law going through that needs to be stopped, that's when we put it out to our folks. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for today for me, but I hope that's been useful.
Excellent. So this is one of the big reasons also why people want to sign up for your newsletter, because this is what you talk about and the things that you alert people on the newsletter. So for those people listening in, make sure you go to citizens.org, that's CITIZENS.org, and sign up for the newsletter. And, Jim, thanks for being here as usual on a radio
show.
I know you take, a portion of your day. Thanks. Yep, we'll catch you next time, everybody. Thanks. Bye for now.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle. And read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.